All right. So we are holding on study bays on the bays. About 2/3 of the way down the Almud Weinigan's Rav Meir. All right, so we've been talking about the Gid Anosha, and we've been talking about what part of the Gid Anosha and or the Chaylev that's around it is Osir or Musir or only Osir Drabanan or because of Minog or whatever. We said so far there's a machloikas between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, that Rav Yehuda says that you just have to cut it off at the surface. It just shouldn't stick up above the surface of the muscle, of the quadriceps muscle, but anything inside of that is mutter. Rashi and Tosfos again discuss, as we said yesterday, are we talking about the Gid Anosha itself, which is what Rashi seems to say, or are we talking only about the fat around the Gid Anosha? Maybe Rabbi Huda agrees that the Gid Anosha itself has to be completely removed, and he's just talking about the fat. Anyway, that's Rabbi Huda. That's Rabbi Huda. And then we said Rameyer had said that you have to take out all the fat. So we said the upshot is, we said that even according to Rav Meir, the fast is only also on a Darabonan level. The Gid itself is also Daraisa, but the fast is only also Darabonan. Okay, so more on that topic. Omer of Yitzchak Shmuel Bamar to Omer Rav. The whole issue in the Torah of the Gid Anosha is actually not about the main Gid Anosha itself, because the main Gid Anosha itself is a thick nerve. It's like wood in that sense. We're going to learn later on in the Perek. We discussed briefly before the idea, do we say yesh gidim benoisim tam or not? Do gidim essentially have a flavor to impart to the meat, or are they basically like wood? And in and of themselves, they may be osir. The Gid Anosha is osir, but it's not necessarily a matter of flavor of it. So Rabbi Yitzchak Shmuel Bamarta is saying, he's telling us in the name of Rav, that actually the main Gid Anosha, the sciatic nerve, is not actually osir daraisa, because it's basically like wood. You can't give a person malchus for eating a piece of wood, basically. You can only give him malchus for eating something that would be edible. So what is awesome? What is awesome in Atorah is the knoichnos, is the branches, the smaller nerves that branch off it, which go into the various muscles. Those are softer. Those are nois and tam. So he learns that those are the ones that would be also on the daraisa level. But the main gid itself would be also only drabon. The pasuk says gid anosha. He's explaining it doesn't mean the actual main gid, because he knows this is what he learned from his rebbe. How does anybody in the Gemara know anything? They learn from their rebbe. Ula Omar, Ula disagrees and says, no, Eitu, yes, sure, it may very well be like wood, because Ein Begidin Menoisin Tam, but Batorah Chiyavah, Allah Batorah makes the person chayav for eating it. Fine, that's Ula's opinion, rather than Amorah, he's entitled to disagree.
So that's fine.
Ula can disagree with Rav can also disagree with Ula. When we say, like, Osra Torah El Shalak Kaf Bilvad, that we say the Torah only answers the nerve that's on the calf, which is basically like Rabbi Yehuda, because we said according to the mayor, you have to dig deeper for it. Rav would say specifically that's talking about the knoichnos, that's talking about the branches of it that are within the calf, that are within the muscle over there. Whereas Ola would say it applies to the main nerve as well as the branches. Okay.
Ola would say everything
that's within the calf, or according to the mayor, maybe even more than that. Yeah, and Rav would say only the knoichnos. Right. It's logical to follow Ula's opinion that the knoiknos are that the main thing is also on a daraisa level, which means Tosfos actually brings from Shiltis that what it means is that Ula would agree, that Ula would actually say the opposite of Rav. What Ula would say, that actually, if we say the logic is like Ula, that would mean midaraisa, the main Gid Anosha, is Osir. But Tosfos brings from Shiltas that it would mean, according to Ula, the knoichnos, the branches of it, would be mutu even derabanan. Now, the halacha is not like Ula in that, but we do accept the halacha, because again, this is, as Tosfos is discussing, maybe all this is only according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rav Meir is more machmir and says you need to take out more of the Gid Anosha. Anyway. Okay, so it's more logical, like Ula, to say that the act of the main Gid Anosha is what's also, even though in and of itself it's tasteless. The Omer of Sheshis, Omer of Ashi, because we find Rav Sheshis telling us the name of Rav Ashi, Chutim Shebachel of Asurin, the Chutim, which are the threads, literally it means, so it means nerves or blood vessels or whatever, chutin shebechelev, that are within the chelev. In other words, the Gemara is going to start discussing soon. You have various areas in the body of the animal where you have chelev, which is osir, and within that chelev, you have chutin, you have blood vessels, and you have nerves and whatever that run through it. So those are osir. the Ein Chayav and Aleihen, but a person is not Chayav Malkus for eating them. So it's not Chayav Chorus, rather, for eating them.
One second.
No, listen. The point is that Rav Asi is telling us that the Chaylev itself, of course, the person eats Chaylev is Chayav Chorus, but if a person eats these Chutin in it, then it's also also, but you're not Chayav, person's not Chayav Chorus for them. But he continues, one second. So it's Alma, Chaylev Amar Achman of Oleh Chutin. Therefore, we can say what that means is the Torah only after the Chaylev itself, not the threads, not the blood vessels and whatever that run through it. Hachanami did Amar Achman of Oleh Chutin. It's the same thing. You can say over here, according to Ullah, it's more logical, therefore, to say when the Torah says the Gid Hanashe Elasar, means the main Gid, the main nerve, not the Chutin, not the branchings off of it. Which again, that's Tosfos is saying, Fuller might hold that those are also that those are mutter not only on a Daraisa level, but maybe even on a Darabonim level. Now, do you still have your question, or has it been answered?
Well, the branches from the deep, from the the central nerve, go into the chelet.
No. You're mixing up two different things. The Gida Nosha has fat around it, but that fat is not chelet. In the Gemara, we've called it chelet, but chelet is also a generic term for fat. You have fat surrounding the Gid Anosha, but that fat is not chelev according to the definition of chelev, which a person would be chayv kares for eating. That, we said, that shuman, we said, according to Rav Meir, is also only on a Darabanan level. According to Rav Yehuda, in and of itself, it's actually mutter even Darabanan, the fat around the Gid. Here we're talking about, Rav Asi is mentioning something else, which the Gemara is going to now go into in a minute, which is we're talking about in other parts of the body, for example, in the abdomen, where you have various fats that are osur, as the Gemara is going to soon discuss, and you have through those sheets of fat, you have nerves and you have blood vessels running through those sheets of fat. Those, even though they're osur because they're associated with the fat, person not chayv kares for eating them because they themselves are not the chaylev. So the same thing over here. The logic is you distinguish between the chaylev and the chutin. The same way over here, it's logical to distinguish between the gid anosha and the chutin. So Rav would be saying that not. Rav would be saying that just the opposite. The chutin are with osur, the gid itself is not. But Ullah is saying that the gid itself, the main gid that's osur, that a person would get malchus for eating the gid anosha. The knoitnois, the branches are not. And we're saying by drawing an analogy with the chutin that runs through the chaylev, it's logical to say that it's the same kind of thing.
The gid is just the gid, and the other one says the gid includes the knoitnois.
No. Again. According to Rav, it's only the knoitnos, not the gid. And according to Ullah, it's the other way around. It's the gid, not the knoitnos.
So actually the
Ritva brings his understanding of the Gemara over here that there may be an opinion. Again, remember, this is all within Rabbi Yehuda. Rav Meir, who we mentioned before, holds that you have to get, we said before, Mechatat Achra before Markham Shahu. So Rav Meir may hold that both the main Gid Anosha and the branches are Ullah. So this discussion between Rav and between Rav and Ullah may only be according to Rabbi Yehuda. That's Tosfos says similarly as well. Okay.
Looks like there's silence from in general, something about lessons like Rav Meir, right?
The halacha is indeed like Rav Meir. And in fact, in a couple of blocks, we're going to have more about this topic of removing the Gid Anosha, where we're going to see that, yes, you definitely have to remove the whole thing. The question is, what is Osir from it Daraisa? What's Osir Drabanan? There is a concept that maybe indeed the halacha is not totally like Rav Meir. Maybe indeed parts of it, the branches and whatever, are only Osir Drabanan. But nevertheless, in practice, it means the whole thing is Osir. Okay. Fine. Onward, Gufa, getting back to, we mentioned incidentally, and now we're going to get into more detail, Amar Rav Sheshes, Amar Rav Asi, Chutin Sheba Chaylev Asurin, we said these strings, these nerves or blood vessels that pass through the Chaylev elsewhere in the body, again, we're not talking about the Gid Anosha, Asurin, they're also to eat, Midrabanan, the Ein Chayav Analayan, but because they're Mutter Daraita, then a person is not Chayav Kores for eating them. Shibakulya Asurin. Similarly, also, you have the Chutin that go in and out of the kidneys. Same idea. In other words, you have nerves and you have blood vessels that go into the kidney, again, through the chelev. The kidney is surrounded, but the kidney is surrounded, actually, we're going to talk about. We have this chelev on top of it, which the prophet calls chelev shalachloyus. You also have fat inside the kidneys themselves, which we're going to talk about in a minute. And then you also have, under that layer of fat on the kidneys, you have a membrane above. You have a membrane above the kidney itself, and in medically it's called the renal capsule. So the capsule itself, we're going to talk about later, but these chutin, we're saying, so these chutin, shibakulya asurin, also they're osur, and also evein chayav and alayin, but also a person not chayav kares for eating them because they're chutin, they're not the essential chaylev itself. Okay, so now let's talk about loiven kulya. Now let's talk about the white substance inside the kidney, which is you have fat within the kidney that fills up a good part of the kidney. So what's part of that fact is osur? Revi v'Rabchiya chad osur v'chad shari. So Revi and Rabchiya argue about it. One of the, we don't know which one is which, but one of them held that the white stuff, the white fat within the kidney itself, is osur, and the other one said it's mutter. So more now for other amiroyim on the subject. Rabba memarketle. Rabba would take it out completely. He would go for all of the roots and all of the little bits of it that are throughout the kidney. Similarly, Rabbi Yochanan memarketle. Rabbi Yochanan would do the same thing. He would take it out completely. On the other hand, Rav Asi goyimle. On the other hand, Rav Asi wouldn't take it out completely. He would just cut it flush. So you have, here's the kidney over here. The reason why you have two different shapes, by the way, is because the kidney is shaped differently. It's shaped differently in cattle and in sheep. And in sheep, it has more of a, what you think of as a kidney shape, shaped like a lima bean, in a round, well, semicircular or whatever. In cattle, it's more bumpy. Anyway, the point is, as far as the genome, it's the same thing. The kidney has what's called in halacha the chorez, the furrow that goes into it. That's actually where you have the tube that goes into it. That's the ureter. That's the urine goes out of the kidney through those. So you have, that's where the fat begins, and then it spreads throughout the various parts of the kidney. So Rav Asi, instead of saying like Rabba and Rabbi Yochanan, they cut out all the fat, he would just cut it flush with the edge of the kidney. In other words, he said that all of the fat further inside of that is mutter. Is mutter, he said.
So it's above the kidney? The fat above?
So the bump, fat around, and the fat around the kidney would be also, but what's inside?
Where it comes out,
basically. Well, in other words, what surrounds the kidney. So you have the fat that surrounds the kidney, and we'll say that's also d'oraisa. You have the stringy things that go through it, the chutim, which we say are also d'rabbanan. And then you have the fat inside the kidney, where we're saying that Rabba and Rabbi Yochanan also held completely also, therefore they would get all of it out. And Rav Asi holds that it's in and of itself it's mutter, so you just have to cut it flush with the edge of the kidney so that you're removing any of it that can be considered any place on the outside of the kidney, but you don't have to worry about what's inside. Outside is also. Right. Omer Abaya, Kavaseder of Asi Mistabra. So Abaya says it's logical to follow Rav Asi's position that you're allowed to eat the fat inside the kidney, and it's just what's also is what's on the outside. The Omer of Abba, Omer of Yehuda, Omer Shmuel, because we find that Rav Abba said in the name of Rav Yehuda and the name of Shmuel, Chelev Shabbosu Choifa Oisei Mutter, Chelev that is covered by muscles, which we're going to talk about that in a second, is Mutter. Let's talk about it now. You have like this. You have the Torah tells us that one type of fat that you're not allowed to eat, which is offered on the Mizbeach and can't be eaten, the Torah tells us is the chelev, which is al-haksolin, which is on the flanks of the animal. Now, you have like this. If you look in the picture over here, you can see that this is a cross-section to an animal. You have along the flanks of the animal, you have areas where you have a layer of muscle and then a layer of fat and another layer of muscle and another layer of fat and so forth. So some of that fat is sandwiched between muscles. That kind is mutter. You would be allowed to eat the fat that's between these layers of muscle. You only wouldn't be allowed to eat what's on the outside. That would be the chelev shalak salim. Rashi also, by the way, mentions that when you go, if you go around the flanks and you go down to the bottom, you have the muscles over there thin out and become like kind of a membrane. So at that point, is that fat considered to be covered by basar? Is it covered by flesh or not? Do we consider that membrane to be flesh or not? So Rashi mentions that some people say it's basar because it's only under a membrane. It's not under flesh. On the other hand, Rashi says that in Eretz Ashkenaz in Germany, they have the minhag to say that it's mutter. And Rashi says, I agree with that also. That part on the bottom over there, the fat on the bottom over there would be mutter. Anyway, the point is that we see that chelev shabbosu choifa oisei mutter, that fat that's covered by muscles is mutter. Alma shalak solim omer achmona v'loshe b'seichak solim. So we see from that when the Torah describes and says that you're not allowed to eat fat, it means the fat that's on the flanks of the animal, in other words, that's directly visible within the animal when you cut it open, not what's inside the flanks, covered by muscle. Hochanami, well then the same logic, Abaya says, we should apply the same logic over here. We should say, what fat is it that's also the fat that's on the kidneys, which is what the Pasuk mentions, not the fat which is within the kidneys. So therefore, it's more logical to follow Rav Asi's position. So now, what is the actual halacha? Usually, we would say, usually when we have Rav Asi against Rav Yechanan, usually the halacha would be like Rav Yechanan, who was Rav Asi's Rebbe. On the other hand, we have a bias pointing out that logic follows Ravasi. So Rashi, well, usually if logic follows Ravasi, maybe the halacha should be like him. If a bias is telling us, so Rashi says that it is better to be machmir, to take out all the fat, because yeah, Abaye said logical like Ravasi, but he didn't actually say in so many words that halacha is like him. However, Rashi says machmir yachmir, those who want to be machmir can be machmir. Somebody who avoids being machmir is also not losing out. In other words, it's allowed either way. Better to be machmir, but not. Tosfos brings from Shiltis that the Shiltis and a number of other Rishonim have the Girsa. Here we have over here that Rabba Mamarchitle, that Rabba is the one who took it out. Now if you have Rabba and then you have Abaye disagreeing and saying logic is more like Ravasi, the halacha would usually be like Abaye against Rabba. But on the other hand, many of the Rishonim have the Girsa Rabba. And if it's Rabba against Abaye, then we know the halacha is usually like Rabba. So that also makes a difference.
The halacha goes from Rava to Abaye to Rava.
When you have a machloikas Rava and Abaye, typically the halacha is like Abaye. But when you have a machloikas Abaye and Rava, then the halacha is usually like Rava. That's just how it is. That's one of the rules of Shas. So therefore, if the girsa over here is Rava as we have it, then the halacha may well be like what Ravasi is saying, like what Abaye is saying. That logic favors Ravasi. On the other hand, if we say it's Rava would take out all the fat, then already you have to follow Rava against Abaye. So you end up with a machlokas on the subject, whether the fat that's inside the kidney is mutter or not. I don't remember what the Rambam passes, but in Shulchan Aruch brings both opinions. So you have people who are makel and people who are machmer. Next time you see a kidney for sale, you can take a look and see what they do. Okay, onward. Gufa. Getting back to what we said, Amar Rav Abba, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Chelev Shabbosu Choyfa Oisei Mutter. We say that fat that's covered up by muscle is mutter. So the problem with that is, Eini, is that so? Amar Rav Abba, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, but the same Rav Abba said in the name of Rav Yehuda who said in the name of Shmuel, Hai Tarva de Tusi Masni Osir. The fat that is under the loins of the animal is osir. Now what do we mean under the loins? So here's, for example, so here's a picture. Yeah, this and have this. They're showing basically the same thing. Rashi explains, we're talking about the fat in this area over here. Now, the thing is, when you cut open the animal, you find the muscles over here are covering that area of fat. So therefore, the question is, so why should it be osir? According to the Rambam, we're talking about the fat basically about here, right under the spine. Whatever. Either way, the point is, when you cut open the animal, you find muscles covering that fat. So why should it be osir? The answer is, Amar Abaye behema b'chaya paruki mefarka. The answer is, yeah, because different how it is when the animal is alive versus after it's dead. When the animal is alive, then the limbs move this way and that. So sometimes you have those muscles move aside as the animal is moving around, and therefore that fat is exposed. And it's in and can be seen if you were to look at that point, if you were to do an X-ray, you would see it from inside the abdominal cavity. After the animal is shafted, yeah, the muscles aren't moving anymore, so then it's covered up. But while it was alive, it was sometimes uncovered, and therefore it's osir. As opposed to, again, according to Rashi, we're talking about the fat over here in these corners, basically, and then in this corner and this corner. Mm-hmm. And according to the Rambam, with the themes, we're talking about what's under the spine. Either way, the point is, as opposed to, again, you have these layers of fat within the ksalim, which are always within the ksalim, when the animal's alive and after it's shechted, you always have these layers of muscle covering that fat. So they're mutter, except for the outside layer. The outer layer, the one closest to the inside, the one closest to the animal kishness. Yeah, that's what I meant. So that one would be also, but the rest of them would be mutter. But we're saying the ones in the corner over here, and the ones under here, those are actually, if you were somehow to look inside the animal while it's alive, you would see those exposed. Therefore, they're also, even though when you shech the animal and cut it open, they seem to be covered with muscles.
This is the whole cavity.
You got to hear the stomach, and you got to hear the kishkis, and whatever. Yeah.
Anything that's covered is mutar.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. You actually, I mean, you do have a little bit of a machlokas rishonim on the subject of how do we define what chaylev is also and mutter anyway. You have the Sefer Yireim, one of the rishonim, Rabbi Eliezer of Mitz, learns that he learns there's no actual anatomical difference between chaylev, which is osur, and shuman, which is mutter. It's just strictly whatever was offered on the mizbeach is osur, and whatever was not offered on the mizbeach is mutter. He says also that's the reason for the machlokas about the fat inside the kidneys. The fact of the matter is the kidneys were offered on the mizbeach. Therefore, the fat inside them was offered as well. So therefore, arguably, if you take that definition of it, then it's then they're also. If you don't, then the Ramban says almost the other way around. He says that there is an actual anatomical difference between chaylev and shuman. We learned earlier in the Sefta that chaylev is like a sheet that drapes over the organs, and it has tosef krum v'niflaf, and has a membrane that can be easily peeled off, whereas shuman is not. And tosef takes a bit of a middle ground that for it to be also a chaylev, it has to be both. It has to be that it has certain characteristics, and also that it was offered on the mizbeach.
If it was offered on the mizbeach, the whole thing is like, finished.
Maybe. No, not necessarily, because, for example, you have the tail of a sheep, the alya, the fat tail of a sheep, is offered on the mizbeach. You know, you have the famous story in Sochem about the goy was pretending to... But the alya is not actually awesome. It's offered, so there you have an example of something that's offered on the mizbeach, but it's not chaylev. It's fatty, but it's shuman. It's not chaylev, it's shuman.
Right.
And vice versa, for example, again, I mean, the kidneys as a whole are offered on the mizbeach, but the kidneys themselves are not offered to eat. Even according to Rabbah or Rava and Rabbi Yochanan, we're saying you have to cut out all of the white stuff, all the fat inside there, and scrape off all the fat on the outside or whatever, but the kidney itself, you'd be allowed to eat. So it's not necessarily that everything that's offered on the mizbeach is also and vice versa. According to the Ramban, yes. According to the Sefer Yireim, not necessarily. Okay, let's go on. Okay. Omer Rav Yochanan. So Rav Yochanan says in this connection that we're mentioning this idea that the muscles are arranged differently inside the body when the animal is alive versus when it's dead, and therefore that you have areas of fat that are covered when the animal is dead but are not covered when it's alive. So Omer Rav Yochanan, you should know, I'm not a butcher, I'm not a son of a butcher. In other words, I have no personal experience with this kind of thing. But I remember the Hochi Avra Ami, Bei Medrasha, that this is the expression they used to say in the Bes Medrash, Behema Bachaya, Paruki Mifarka, that an animal, when it's alive, the limbs move around and the muscles move around relative to each other, and therefore you have areas of chaylev that are also, even though they look superficially like they were covered. Let's talk more about what chaylev is osur and mutter. Omer of Abba, Omer of Yirmiya.
He's not an expert, but he is an expert.
No, he's an expert in terms of he heard in the Bes Medrash this idea that you should know behema b'chayam b'sparukli peruki, and therefore that you have, and therefore practically speaking that you have that you have areas that are of chaylev that even though when you cut open the animal it looks like they're covered, but nevertheless they're still osur. Okay, let's talk more about chaylev that's osur. Amar of Abba, Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Chaylev sha'al hemsis or beis hakosis asurin v'onush koris. The fat that is on the hemsis and the beis hakosis. So we've learned previously that an animal has four stomachs, and they're covered. You have two sheets of fat that you have two sheets of fat that cover the stomach. You actually in the art school they have good diagrams for it. We'll borrow that a second. You have over here, there's the four stomachs, there's the hemsis, which is the third stomach, there's the beis hakosis, which is the second. I have no idea, by the way, why the Gemara lists the hemsis first, but anyway, whatever. The point is, so you have one sheet of fat that covers the two of them, it's called in medicalese they call it the lesser omentum, and then you have another one which covers the keras, the larger stomach, and when part of it also goes on the duodenum, which is the Reshmei Ayah, which we'll talk about soon, and that one is called the greater omentum. In Torah terminology, the first one is chaylev asher al akedem, and the first one is chaylev makaseh al akedem. So that's what we're going to be finding. They're also. They're both among the fasts that are offered on the mizbeach, and therefore they're both fasts that are also. So Amr of Abba, Amr of
Yehuda.
No, so the stomach itself doesn't go on the mizbeach, but you take off the fat. Again, the fat is tosef krum v'niflaf. It can be easily peeled off. It's got a membrane on it, so therefore that's what the kohenim do. They peel it off or they scrape off whatever part can't be. Yeah, and then they take those sheets of fat and they burn them on the mizbeach. So Amar of Abba, Amar of Yehoram Shmuel, Chelav Shal Hemsis the Beis Hakoses Asurin Va'Onish Koris. That fat that's on the Hemsis and the Beis Hakoses, a person if he eats that is also to eat the Daraisa, and if a person eats it, he's Chayav Koris. V'Zo Chelav Shal Akerev. This is the definition when the pasuk says that you take the Chelav Asher Al Akerev. That's what it means. It means that sheet of fat.
What, on the
Beis Hakoses? On the Hemsis and the Beis Hakoses. And also, Omer of Abba, Omer of Yehuda, Omer Shmuel.
There's
no other than that? No, there is other chelav. We're going to talk about it soon. Okay, but he wants to inform you. You shouldn't think that only the greater omentum, the chelav amachaseh akerev, the one that covers the large stomach, you shouldn't think only that is also, and the sheet that covers the smaller stomachs, maybe is mutter. No, it's also as well. Omer of Abba, Omer of Yehuda, Omer Shmuel. High tauber de kalibusta, also the fat that's on the kalibosis. The kalibosis is a bone near the back of the animal. The way Rashi defines it, it seems like he's referring to the sacrum. In a person, the sacrum is pretty much the lowest bone of the spine. Like the tailbone, basically. So, and an animal is similar. An animal has an actual tail, but it has this bone, the sacrum, or some other bone in that area, and it's got fat on it. So that also onush kares. There also, if a person eats that fat, then it's also midaraisa, and a person is chayav kares for it. V'zeh chelav shal ksolim. That is the definite. That's part of the fat that's on the ksolim, that's on the flanks of the animal. So that fat goes it's on the back, and then it extends down from there. Like you have, that's fine. But you have the kaliboses is over here. It's part of the spine, and then you have the fat that's on it extends outward over here to the flank. So it's included in the chelav shal ksolim. He's telling us the ksolim doesn't only mean the sides of the animal. It also means up there. It also means where it starts up there. Under the edges of the hip muscles. Okay. All right. The Omer of Abba, Omer of Yehuda, Omer Shmuel, Chutin Shabiyad Asurin. Now, Rab Abba also tells us, Rab Abba, Omer of Yehuda, Omer Shmuel tells us, also the threads that are in the foreleg of the animal. So Rashi describes that they're ones that we nowadays, when we do Nikur, the front legs. This, by the way, this whole process of taking out these various things that the Gemara is describing over here, the gidanosha and its fat and all these various sheets and pieces and whatever, chaylev, this whole thing is called nikur. And then it's called nikur in Hebrew, and Yiddish it's called shivering. So nowadays it's a somewhat uncommon thing for them to do nikur in the back half of the animal because it's harder to get over there. But in many other places in the world, over time the minhag developed to not, the practice developed to knock because it's too hard to make sure it's done properly. It's very easy to miss something. So now we're mentioning the forelegs, the front legs of the animal. So there are chutin over there, as the Gemara is going to discuss now, but there aren't as many. You have some things over there that need to be cut out, or at least they need to be cut open in order that the blood can drain from them. But you don't really have so much. You don't really have chelev or other such things that are also in the front half of the animal. So once you get past about the 11th or 12th rib back and going further back from there, that's where you have all these various sheets of chelev and whatnot and gidanosha and everything and then blood vessels and everything that the Gemara is going to mention now that you have to remove. So it's hard to do that. So therefore, the practice developed in many places to not bother.
It's a big part.
It is a big part. So they sell it to goyim. Well, that's true. You have, for example, sirloin. You have over there.
Exactly what we shouldn't eat.
Well, no. I mean, again, in some places, for example, in Eretz Yisrael, they do take the trouble to do it. They do take the trouble to do it because meat is harder to get over there, and then you don't have as much of a goyish clientele to sell it to. But that's in most other places, in the United States, and most other countries. Fine, they sell that whole back half to goyim. I was reading an interesting thing about this during the mid-1930s, the government of Poland, or a bunch of anti-Semites, passed laws to the effect that meat of animals that are killed by shchita is only allowed to be eaten by Jews. Goyim are not allowed to eat such meat. And the idea was they wanted to make, first of all, they wanted to claim that shchita is cruel and inhumane, and of course, you know, those chayadim agolim yishakur, as the pasuk says, they kiss calves, and meanwhile they're going and killing people, pogroms, and a couple of years later, the Holocaust and everything. Anyway, but aside from that, also they wanted to make that shchita will be very uneconomical, because if you can't sell the whole back half of the animal to the goy, then you're not going to be able to have meat for klal. So they asked the rabbonim of that period, what should we do? Should we go back to the minhag of being menachem meat? Sort of Chaim Oizer, who was the head rav in Poland in those days, looked into it. He said, it's not an actual matter of minhag to not do nikkur. It's just practically speaking, it's uneconomical. It doesn't mean that it's a minhag. So therefore, there's no problem in going back to doing nikkur as long as you do it carefully. And then he consulted also with the various rebbeim who were in Poland at that time, including the Friedrich Rebbe, and they all agreed with him. So that's what they ended up doing. For the last few years before the war, they were doing nikkur in Poland. They're taking out the various bits of fat that we're talking about over here, the various sheets and pieces and whatever of fat, and then all the branches of Gidon Asha, all the various fats and the blood vessels that go through them, and then the Gemara is going to discuss over here, you have various blood vessels over here that have to be either removed or at least cut open so that the blood can flow out of them freely. Omer of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Chutin Shebiyad Asurin, the blood vessels that are in the front legs of the animal, Rashi describes that they're ones that we take out from the shoulder. Other Mephoshim say, we're not just talking about the shoulder, we're talking about they extend downward in the front legs also. Anyway, Asurin, those blood vessels are also. Amr of Safra, said of Safra, says, I don't understand. Moshe, which Rashi says means Tamid Chacham, or Rashi elsewhere explains that it means that Rav Safra is swearing by the name of Moshe. Mi Amar Achmana LeTechol Bisra. How can you say such a thing? Did the Torah say that you're not allowed to eat meat? What's the problem with those chutim? There's no chaylev there. Well, on the face of it, it's not chaylev, so in that case, why should it be altered? That's the answer. Amar Rava Moshe. So Rava answers back. You're Moshe. Let's say Moshe also. You Rav Safra, the Tamar Chacham. Mi Amar Achmana Achol Dama. Nu, and did the Torah say you're allowed to eat blood? The reason why you have to cut these things out is not because of chaylev, it's because of blood. Because you have blood absorbed into them. Yeah.
So one second.
That's what we're going to discuss. Hold on. That's what we're going to start discussing now, what you have to do with them exactly. So it's true. You don't necessarily have to remove them completely. When we say asurim, it doesn't mean you have to remove them completely like you would chayla. But that's what we're going to discuss now, what you have to do. By the way, there is an idea that's brought in a number of places in Chassidus that when Rashi is saying over here, this Moshe Tamid Chacham, every Tamid Chacham is a nitzot of Moshe Rabbeinu. So therefore, a Tamid Chacham can be called Moshe, as Rav Safra and Rava are doing over here. Okay, so what are the dinim then in that case? Chaschei u'malchei. So the din would be like this thing. If you cut these blood vessels and you salt it, the way you salt meat, then fine. Then you would even be allowed to cook it in a pot. Then we say, in other words, that there you kashered it properly, all the blood was gotten out, therefore you have no problems. Tosfos discusses over here, and you have a couple of different opinions over here. Tosfos starts discussing, so what does that mean? Are we saying that if you cut it, then you're looked even to cook it in a pot, implying, and if you didn't cut it, you wouldn't even be allowed to roast it? The implication, Tosfos says, is that, yeah, we were saying, when we started saying asurim, the implication is that even if you just wanted to roast it over the fire, which in and of itself doesn't need kashering in order to do that, then maybe it should be also unless you cut them open. So Tosfos learns that even if you're going to be roasting meat, you still have to cut open the blood vessels
to
let the blood run out. Even if you're going to roast it. On the other hand, Rashi on Amud Beis disagrees with that and says that you don't need to, that if you're roasting it, you don't need to cut it. Only if you're cooking in a pot, where then the blood doesn't have any place to flow, then you need to cut it, then you need
to...
I don't know what they do for the carbon paste off, according to Tosfos, but they would have had to. They would have had to cut the blood vessels. According to Rashi, they wouldn't. And then you have Rishonim, the Rosh and the Tur, bring from the Goinim, that it may actually depend. Are we talking about blood vessels that are close to the surface? So therefore, when you're roasting it, then the heat will be able to affect them and the blood will come out. Or are we talking about blood vessels that are deeper inside the muscle, where then maybe the heat of the fire may not get to them enough to be able to, and then the blood will end up getting cooked in there, and then you have a problem. So in Shulchan Aruch, it brings the last two opinions. The opinion of Tosfos that you always have to cut it is not accepted by Halacha. You have the two other opinions, either that you don't have to cut the flow, or that you only have to cut the ones that are not quite so close to the surface. But again, that's only if you're roasting it. If you're going to be cashering it and cutting it, then yes, you have to cut them open regardless. Okay, getting back to Chaleb now. Amr of Yehuda Amr Shemol, Resh Me'aya Ba'amsa Boi Grira, the beginning of the Me'ayim. So you have like this. After you have the four summits, then after the four summits, you have the from the four summits, there comes out a tube, which is more or less straight. In English, and medically, it's called the duodenum. And then from there, it goes into the intestines, which curl around, and you have the curly part, you have the wavy part and the curly part and whatever. So that first part is called Resh Me'aya. So that part, the amsa, an amma's length of it, boy grira, you have to scrape off the fat from it. V'zochelav sha'alav dakin. This is, when we learned earlier in the Masechta, that you have fat, which is on the dakin, which is on the intestines, which actually we said over there, that the Rashi brings over here, that we said over there, that Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva argue about whether that fat is mutter or not. Actually there, in Perek Eilu Treifus, when we learned that, Rashi said that everybody agrees that's also. So that Gilyon HaShas, Rabbi Akiva Eger, brings up the point that Rashi seems to be contradicting himself. Be that as it may, that fat that runs along that one amma of the duodenum, boy gruda, that needs to be scraped off, and that because that is the chelav shalav dakin, which we're saying the chelav shalav dakin is also.
Only the duodenum?
Only the duodenum. The fat that's on the rest of the curly intestines or whatever is fat that's mutter. The Gemara had called it earlier. The duodenum is this over here. It's after the fourth stomach. After the fourth stomach, you have a tube that leads from that to the intestines. Let's see if we can find a good picture of it over here. Not in the end papers over here, but I guess if we look elsewhere, but that's the idea. In other words, here. Let's see here. 70 358F. Okay, so we learned that you have the four stomachs. So you have the four stomachs. And then you have after the four stomachs, then you have over there, you have this tube that grows out from it. Mm-hmm. That's the duodenum. That's the Resh Me'aya. The Rambam brings from the Gaonim that actually the end we're talking about is actually the other end. It's the rectum. After the curly intestine, you have a straight tube that goes out to the rear of the animal, and that's where the waste comes out. The Rambam brings from the Gaonim that's the Resh Me'aya that we're talking about over here. Not the duodenum, but the other end, the rectum.
So what do
we do? For the mice, we don't eat the fat meat then. By the way, I mean, the Ma'aril points out, it doesn't have to be, when we say an amma over here, it doesn't literally mean you have to measure it to the centimeter, according to the Avraham Chaim, no, according to the Chazon Ish. It means you measure it with your forearm. You measure it from elbow to tip of finger, and that's good enough.
Okay.
Yeah, that's whatever. The point is that once you scrape off that part, then we're not worried about the fat on the back of it. Okay. The Amr of Yehuda. Rav Yehuda also says, more dinim about things that are also and mutter in the animal. Chutin sheba oikis asurim. The strings, again, meaning blood vessels that are in the oikis, in the tail of the animal, or near the tail, asurin. Those are also asur. So what does that mean? So how many of them do we have? Cham shechuti isbe, bekafla. There are five of these chutim that are in the flanks. And actually, it's not so much the chutim, are not so much, these chutim that we're talking about, are not so much also because of blood. They're not such large blood vessels that there would be an issue when you roasted it or kashered it or whatever. The problem of them is, as we said before, they run through the chelev. They're associated with the chelev, and therefore midraban on their also. So you have five of them, the Gemara says. Chlosami minu tre mismala. Three are on the right of the animal, and two are on the left. Chlosam mafatsli the tre, on the side where there are three of them, on the right side, each of those three divides further down into two. And tre mafatsli the tlosa, and the two on the left side, each one branches out into three. So altogether, on each side, you have six branches. Yeah. So what does that mean? So nafkamina, why is it important to know exactly how many there are? So like this, the ishalat lahu ad b'chamimi, if you pull them out from the animal while it's still warm, and it was right after you shefted the animal, mishalfi, then they come out very easily, and then you don't have a problem. The iloi, but if you wait till the animal cools off a little bit, then these things are harder to get out, because then they get stuck to the fat. And then, boy chatuti basrayu, then you have to start digging after them, and you have to find that exact number. So therefore, you have to know exactly how many you're expected to find so that you'll know whether you got all of them when the animal was fresh, and if not, then you know how much you have to dig for. Okay. Amar Abaye b'Tamei Rabbi Yehuda. So Abaye says, or some say Rabbi Yehuda said, Hamisha Chuti Habu. Now, also elsewhere in the body, you have five threads, again, five blood vessels, that are osur. Tlosa Mishum Tarba Utrei Mishum Doma. Three of them are also on the grounds that they're associated with chalev, and two of them on the grounds of that they're full of blood. One nachdimina of it is, first of all, again, the ones with blood is after you can cut them open, and you know, as we said before, and you know the problem. And according to Rashi, and according to the Gaonim, maybe you don't even need to cut them open if you're going to be roasting the meat. And the ones with chalev are going to be also regardless. On the other hand, if you're talking about a chaya or you're talking about a bird, then the ones with chalev are not an issue. Only the blood ones are an issue.
Right.
So therefore, it's important to know which one is which. Okay, the tachli, you have the threads, the blood vessels that are in the spleen, or the kachli, and the ones that are in the flanks of the animal, or the kulyasa, and the ones that are in the kidneys, mishum targa. Those three are also because they're fat, because they run through fat, which is osur, and therefore they're osur. In the case of the one with the spleen, it says in Shulchan Aruch that one divides into three. It divides into three inside the spleen, and the same idea. If you pull it out while it's fresh, then the three branches will come along with it. And if one of them snaps, then you have to go start digging in there to get all of it out. So those three are also on the grounds of fat of chaylev, and therefore again in a chayer or an oif it wouldn't be an issue. The bay or the mukra, then you have the I skipped a few lines. The yoda, the ones that are in the front legs of the animal, or the loya, and the ones that are in the jaw and the tongue of the animal, mishum dama, those are the ones that are also on the grounds of blood. And therefore, so lamai nakimina, so why is it important to know which ones are also a chalev and which ones are blood? The answer is, that's just it. Hani de mishum dama, the ones that are also on the grounds of blood. It's not necessarily such a problem. If you cut them open and you do malicha and you salt the meat, shaper dummy, then you're good. On the other hand, the ones that have to do with chaylev, those there's no way of picking them up. Chaylev is chaylev, and anything that runs through the chaylev is also awesome. But again, on the other hand, with a chaya or no, if you don't have an issue with that,
you cannot dissect the chaylev.
Well, again, with a behemoth, that's it. A chaylev is also, and anything that's associated with a chaylev is also. You can dissect it. You're allowed to. The chaylev is always mutter ba'ana. It's just also to eat. So, yeah, you have to take off all the chaylev, and then you can do with it whatever you want. You can use it for, yeah.
Your personal food.
No, a behemoth means, in other words, a cow, a sheep, or a goat, domestic animal.
Like using for your own.
Yeah. Well, or that you sell it. You can get, well, oh, you're saying you can you give the chaylev to an animal, to a wild animal to eat? I guess.
The main thing is you can't eat that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think domestic animals that a person keeps aren't going to eat chaylev. But no, they could use, you could use chaylev, and you can use chaylev like you use, like, yeah, you use shmir on other things, you use it to soften leather, you use it for, use it as a lubricant. Yeah, you're allowed to have enough. Yeah. Okay. Okay, Omer of Kahana v'Temer of Yehuda, Chamisha Karim Yehavu. You also have, speaking of things in the animal that are osur, that you have to remove, again, this is basically a primer on the halachas of Nikur. By the way, the Ramah mentions twice in these halachas in Shulchan Aruch, in the halachas of Chelev and the halachas of Dam, that you can't really learn Nikur from a sefer. He says, I can't really describe the details of what needs to be removed or not. You need to actually go to a shlachtos and see it in person in order to get the full, So yeah, you have. I mean, there's a bunch of Sifrei Nikur that have been written over the centuries that describe. You open up this part and you take out this thing, and you open up this part and take out that thing. But your foot need actual shimush. You need actual practice with a shofar to break it. As far as at least the early ones, no. Maybe later ones, maybe more contemporary ones, yes. But the older ones the older ones like I've seen on Hebrew books, no. Then no diagrams.
Your whole hands that come out bloody, then you're doing a good job.
This is probably also true, but nevertheless, you still need shimush. All right, Amul. So Amud of Kahana v'Tamei Rabbi Yehuda, Chamisha Karim Yehavu, there are five membranes in the body of an animal that are osur and that have to be taken out. Again, plus the Mishum Tarbo, Tre Mishum Dama. like the list of the five chutim, three of them are also because of chelav, two of them are also because of blood. The tachli, again, you have those because of chetaber and chelav, yeah. That's, by the way, the word tribering in Yiddish for removing the chelav and whatever comes from that.
Tribering
comes from tariba, yeah. Okay. So the tachli, you have the membrane around the spleen. The kafli, you have the membrane on the inside of the flanks of the animal that we were talking about before, or the kuyosa, and the membrane that's around the kidneys, the renal capsule. Those mishum tariba, those are also on the grounds of chelev, because they themselves, not necessarily are they themselves chelev, but they're attached to and they're associated with the chelev, and therefore you have to remove them. The beir, the mukra mishum doma. On the other hand, then you have the krum, you have the membrane on the beye, which are the testicles, and the moikra, that's around the brain. And those, mishum dama, those are also, and you have to remove them because of the blood vessels in there.
Not because
of chelev. There's no chelev on the testicles and on the brain, but there's lots of blood vessels over there. Well, that's the thing. In other words, as we said before, you would have to cut them open and allow the blood to be able to flow out freely, or you would have to roast it, as the case may be. Here you have a picture, by the way. Here's an example of the bay, where you have the inner membrane over there is full of blood vessels, and there you have the brain, which also the membranes on it are full of blood vessels.
But the brain is
here. This is the brain on down here, and this is testicle up here.
The brain
is in the head, and the testicles are at the basin. Okay, so the Gemara tells a case. Now, we mentioned just now that the spleen, we said you have to remove the chelev that's on. Now, the spleen actually has here's a picture of a spleen. You can see it's covered with this membrane, which we said is fat. So the spleen has a thick end and a thin end. You have a thick end, which is where that thing that we said before, that chut comes in, that branches out of the spleen inside it. That's basically where whatever the spleen accomplishes in the body, it recycles red blood cells and does other things. All of that comes in and out through those veins and whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you have the thin end. So where are we? Okay, Rabbi Yehuda bar Oshia havaka kolis leitachla lelevi bread Rabbi Huna bachia. Rabbi Yehuda bar Oshia was peeling the membrane and the fat off a spleen for Levi, the son of Rabbi Huna bar Chia. So Levi wanted the spleen to eat. So Rabbi Yehuda bar Oshia, who I guess was a Talmud of his, was peeling off the membrane for him. Now he was just cutting off. He was just cutting it off flush on the top end, on the thicker end of the spleen, the area that has this vein. Omalei. So Levi tells him, Chus Beit Fei, go further down. You don't just remove the fat and the krum and whatever on the top. You have to remove all of it. Also Avua Ashkechei. So then Levi's father, Rav Huna bar Chiya, came and found him, and they were discussing this. Omale, so he tells him, not necessarily. You should know, Hochi Omar Avua De'imach Mishum De'Rav. You should know that your mother's father said in the name of Rav. And the Gemara interjects, who is Levi's grandfather, Umanu Rav Yumi of Abba, namely that is Rav Yumi of Abba, said in the name of Rav, Lo Osra Torah Elashala Dad Bilvad. Now the Torah only asks the fat that is on the dad, that's on the thick part of the spleen, this area over here. So therefore, you don't have to tell Rabbi Yehuda bar Oshia to cut off the fat and whatever on the bottom part, because the Torah only answers what's on the top part. So the question is, Aini, is that so? But didn't Rav Hamnuna say, Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Krum Shala Tchoil Osir, the membrane that's on the spleen is Osir. Vashis meaning, well, that's what we have to figure out. Vein Chayov and Olav, but a person is not Chayov Kori sweeting it. So we have to figure, what part are we talking about? Hefi Domi, what scenario are we talking about? Ilema Shala Dad, are we talking about the membrane and the fat that's on the thick part? What do you mean? What do you mean you're not chayav for it? That part is definitely also medaraisa.
Everyone agrees
to that. Because that part, by the way, is part of the chelev sha'ala keref. That's that big sheet of fat that covers up that covers the keref and a number of the other internal organs. Also, part of it is attached to the spleen on the thick end. So that part is definitely also medaraisa.
One second, the fat is also attached to the spleen?
Yes. So you have over here, you can see in the picture over here that the spleen hangs over the edge of the keres.
Right.
And therefore, the sheet of fat that covers the keres, the chelev, the greater omentum, also attaches to the thick end of the spleen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what do you mean it's not? So what do you mean that part is the person is not chayv karis for? Ela de kula. Obviously, the braisa must mean the fat that's on the rest of it. So what are you telling me that? So what are you telling me that Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba said in the name of Rav that only the sixth end has to be peeled? Apparently, from that braisa, it seems the whole thing has to be peeled. Omalei. So he tells him, okay, itanya tanya. Okay, if it's taught in a braisa, then it's taught in a braisa. Now, the pashtus, it would sound like that means. In other words, he's saying, okay, I changed my mind. There's actually a Rashi in at least one place, in Nida, where you have this expression also, where Rashi says it means I'm not necessarily changing my mind. I learned from my Rebbeim this way. That's only what's on the thick end that's also. You say you're quoting a Braisa, that you're saying, fine, you're entitled to be Machmir and follow that Braisa. I don't have to change my mind because of that.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know. And
he says, wrong.
So again, right. Gufa, getting back to, we said, Amr of Hamnona, Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Krum Shalat Choyl also, the membrane that's on the spleen is also, the Ein Chayavan Olav, and we said a person is not Chayav Karis for it, because we said only the part on the thick end is also Zarai, so the rest of it is only also Zarabanan. And also Krum Shal Gavikulya also the membrane that's directly on top of the spleen, the renal capsule, is also the Ein Chayavan Olav, but a person is not Chayav for it. So the question is, well, Tanya Chayav and Olav. We have other braises that say that a person is Chayav Karis for eating those membranes. So what is it? So the answer is Tchol HaTchol LaKasha. There's no contradiction with the two braises about the spleen, HaKenegad HaDad, HaShalai Kenegad HaDad. Because one's talking about the thick end. That one, everybody agrees, is also Daraisa. And the other part is talking about the thin end, which is only also Darabana. Akulya Akulya Nami LaKasha. And the two about the kidneys are also not a contradiction. You have the upper membrane and you have the lower membrane. There's an upper membrane. Then you have the fat that surrounds the kidney, the chela bakloyus. Then you have inside that is the kidney, and within that is more fat that we talked about.
Membrane is where?
Here you have the outer membrane over here
of the kidney.
Then you have inside that is fat. Inside that is the actual kidney. Inside that is the other white stuff inside the kidney that we mentioned before. But anyway, the point is, so here, when we're saying that, when we have one braisa saying that the membrane, a person is chayav karis for eating, and the other one we said that he's not. So the one where he's chayav karis for eating is the outer one. That one is considered part of the chalav. If we said before that the definition of chalav is toisav krum beniklach, that it's attached to a membrane which can be peeled off with it, so that membrane is part of the chalav. So therefore, that's it. On the other hand, the membrane that's on the inside, that's directly above the flesh of the kidney, that one is only also dirabon.
You could peel it also.
Again, you can peel it, but it's also only dirabon. Fine, but just because you can peel it doesn't make it chalav. The chalav itself is what's outside of that. But then that membrane. Talking more about things in the body that are mutter and that are osur, bei chashilta. Let's talk about, we mentioned before about the testicles of an animal. We mentioned that you have a membrane on them that's full of blood vessels, which have to be removed. So let's, chashilta, so Rashi just says, beite zokar hama'urim begufay, that it means testicles that are still attached to the body, but in other words, they've been damaged. So you have different understandings. One understanding is that we're talking about that they were cut, that the spermatic cords or whatever that attach them to the body were cut, but they're still hanging there inside the scrotum, inside the sac. The other explanation, which a number of Rishonim have, is that chashilta means that they've been crushed. So same idea. In other words, they're still inside the scrotum, but they've been crushed. Anyway, what's the din about them? If you shech the animal, are you allowed to eat them? Rav Ami and Rav Asi, Chad Osir and Chad Shori. Rav Ami and Rav Asi disagree on that. One says it's Osir because it's Eivim and Achai, and the other one says it's Mutter. We learned at the beginning of the fourth parak, that if, let's say, you have an animal, and you reach in to the animal while it's alive, and cut, let's say, its spleen, or the kidneys, or some other organ that won't make it trace by cutting it, and you left the pieces inside, and then later on you shefted it, we said those pieces will be Osir as Eivim and Achai. Even though they're left inside. So now, Rav Ami and Rav Asi. So now they're arguing on the same point over here. Are they considered Eivim and Achai or not?
If you cut them off.
So again, according to Rashi, we're talking about apparently that they were cut, but they were cut off from the cords that they're suspended from, but they're still inside the scrotum. According to everybody else, we mean that they were crushed, but they're still inside there. Whatever, anyway. Man de author, the one who says they're author, he would say it's considered Eid Menachai Midaloi Kabayan, because since we see that they're never going to heal, they're never going to recover their original state, therefore Hani Eid Menachai Minu. So therefore it's effectively Eid Menachai. Now, Tosfos points out, we had in the fourth parak in Behemah HaMakshah, we talked about the whole concept of Abraham Adoldo. We talked about, you have a case over there of a limb that's dangling from the animal, which is not quite completely cut off, but it's never going to heal. We said over there that when we had a whole discussion over there, when you shech the animal, is it considered Eid Menachai or not? We ended up saying that it's only also mitzad elam mitzvah proish bilvad. We said over there, there's a mitzvah to stay away from it. We said that Rashi and Tosfos and most of the Rishonim learned that it's only also derabanan. We said that minatora wouldn't be Eid Menachai, only midrabanan it is. And we said the Rambam over there learned that, okay, it means it doesn't say explicitly in the pasuk, but it's still, anyway, the point is, so the same thing over here, he would argue the same thing. It's the same kind of thing. It's like Abraham Adoldo, because it's never going to recover.
So therefore,
fine, it won't be also minatora, but it'll still be also to eat midrabanan. Man de Shari, the one who says it's Mutter between Rabbi Ami and Rabasi, he would say, okay, but on the other hand, Midaloika Masrachan, given that you see, normally when you cut off a piece from the body and then leave it, it starts decaying because it doesn't have a blood supply anymore. Here they don't decay. Hani Chayusa is Bahu, so obviously they still have some life left in them. They still have a blood supply. The Idach, whereas the other opinion would say, okay, the difference is high Deloka Masrachon. Sure, in practice they don't decay, but you know why not? Deloka Shalat Bahu Avira. The reason is because no air is getting to them, so they're still inside the sack. So therefore, no outside air. How do things decay? Because bacteria, well, you don't have any bacteria able to get there. You don't have any outside air and bacteria and whatever you're able to get to them. The Idach, whereas the other opinion that says they're Mutter, would say, nevertheless, the fact of the matter is, he would say the fact that they don't decay in and of itself shows that they still have chayus, they still have a blood supply. You're asking in that case, why do they never recover? Why do they never go back to their original healthy state? Okay, because there's a weakness in them. But in other words, not such a weakness that they would actually... It's not reversible necessarily. It's a weakness which is not reversible. Fine. But nevertheless, they still have a chayus to them. It's more than just, in other words, he's saying, it's more than just they're not decaying because they're protected from the outside and the bacteria and whatever. No, they're not decaying because they still have an actual chayus to them. It's just not enough chayus for them to recover. But it's enough chayus for them to remain alive and remain a part of the body, and therefore they're not also as Eid Menachai. Amalei Rav Yochanan and Rav Shimon bar Abba. So what's the actual halacha? So Rav Yochanan says to Rav Shimon bar Abba. Now Rav Shimon bar Abba was originally from Babel and then moved to Eretz Yisrael, and he became a Talmud of Rav Yochanan. And he tells him, Hani bei chashilta shalyan. This case over here with these testicles that were cut off or crushed or whatever are technically mutter when you shech the animal. But at loy teichu, but you Rav Shimon bar Abba should not eat them. Mishum al titash teiras imecha. Because the pasuk says, don't abandon the Torah of your mother. And in Babel, they have the minhag to say that it's also. Because after all, you have Macholikas of Ami and Rav Asi, and in Babel, they were Machmir because they weren't sure who the halacha is like. Because the Chachamim are compared to like the mother of the Jewish people. The whole pasuk is Shmabini Musa Ravicha Valtitash Teres Imecha. Avicha refers to Hashem, so that refers to Teresh Mechav. Valtitash Teres Imecha refers to the Torah that we learned from the Chachamim who nurture us like a mother. Teresh Rabbein. Rashi says the fact of the matter is that the fact of the matter is we always follow the Chachamim of Babel because Rashi doesn't say it, I don't remember who says it, but anyway, the point is that we follow the Chachamim of Babel. In general, we follow the Pesachim of the Talmud Bavli against Talmud Yerushalmi, and therefore practically speaking it means that they're also. So we're machmer like Rabbi Yechanan is telling Rav Shimon bar Abba to be machmer. Okay. More dinim on the subject. Amar Mar Rav Ashi, Hai Bei Degadya. Now going back to, forget about Bei Chashilta for a second. Let's say the Beisim are completely healthy. But we said before that they have a membrane around them which has blood vessels in them. And therefore you have to cut them open in order to drain the blood before you're able to eat them. So now the Gemara is going to tell us it's not so simple. Alma Mabravashi, Hai Beid Gadya, the basim of a young goat, and Rashi says that doesn't mean a goat, it just means a baby animal. add tlosim yoimin up to when the animal is 30 days old, shayan blow slipper, then you're allowed to eat them without peeling off that membrane because you don't really have the blood vessels haven't really developed yet. So therefore, you have no problem. It's like any other meat. You can kasher it in the normal way and eat it. You don't have to cut open anything, or you can roast it, as the case may be. Mikan va'elach, after the animal, not 3 years, 30 days. After 30 days, e azra anasurin, if the animal is able to produce zera, is able to produce sperm, then it means there are blood vessels there. Therefore, asurin, the eloy azra an shalyan, and if it's not yet producing zera, then it's mutter. So the question is, minoyadin, and how you... Animals mature a lot faster than people, you know. Yeah.
For 30 days?
Yeah. So the question is, minoyadin, and how do we know whether the animal is actually able to produce yet? The answer is, e ispu shuraiti sumki. We look and we see, are there red streaks in the membrane around the basin? Asiran. Then there also, because when those red streaks are blood vessels, lespu shuraiti sumki. On the other hand, if you don't find red streaks, shariyan, then it's allowed without doing anything further. And the Rashba brings that what it is actually you need both. If the animal is less than 30 days old, even if you have red streaks, then it's mutter without doing anything else. Because he said those red streaks are not really a sign of blood vessels yet. So therefore, in other words, what we're saying is, in order for it to be also, you would need both. It would have to be over 30 days old, and that you see red streaks. That's when we're saying that you need to cut it open, etc., and drain the blood.
Red streaks.
Red streaks. Before 30 days, they're actually says don't mean anything. Okay. All right. More on dinim of things that are also or mutter on grounds of blood. Umsi, beye, umizriki. As far as umsi, which umsa is raw meat, and specifically the Gemara is going to talk about in a few lines, that it means that the you have this piece of raw meat is redder is red. In other words, usually meat has blood in it. Well, in other words, what it is like this. Usually meat has blood in it, but minatoda, we talked about this briefly at the end of the third paragraph, but minatoda blood is also only if it moved from where it originally was when the animal was shechted. If it's still in the same place where it was, then technically minatoda is mutter. But here you have the problem that it became red, as the Gemara is going to say soon. Rashi learns that what we're talking about is, for example, if the animal was wounded or something, and therefore that you have a collection of blood over there, or like a bruise kind of, and there, so therefore...
The blood that was collected from the shechita is mutter.
No. What do you mean?
If the blood collected...
No. In other words, if you cut off a piece of meat from the animal, and you just have the regular amount of blood in there, in the capillaries, then that would be mutter. And in fact, the Gemara tells us in Tzachim, you have this thing about umsi bei or mizriki is also in a Gemara in Tzachim, because it talks about it in connection with the Korban Pesach over there. In those days, the minhag was sometimes that instead of kashering meat with salt or with roasting or whatever, a minhag was sometimes you would take a piece of meat and put it into vinegar, and the vinegar would not so much destroys everything, but what it would do is it constrict the blood vessels. So now the blood's not moving anyplace else. The blood's not moving anywhere within the meat. It's not coming to the surface. It's not going anywhere. Therefore, now once that's done, you would be allowed to take that piece of meat and cook it. In later times, the Goyim said, don't do that, among other things, because people are not such experts at putting it in vinegar for long enough and whatever, and you're likely to not leave it in there long enough, and you'll have a problem, and you'll have a problem of eating blood. But,
Was the blood flowing into the food?
Well, okay, that's it. Right. Anyway, but the point is you were allowed to. But anyway, so here we're talking about, though, you have this meat. So Rashi learns that what it is that the animal was injured while it's alive. So now you have a bruise over there. You have blood collected in one place in the muscle, and therefore you need something more than regular kashering. As the Gemara, or you may need something more than regular kashering, as the Gemara is going to discuss. That's what we have to figure out. Other Rishonim learn that umsi is talking about, that we're talking about this kind of thing, like it describes in Tzachim, where you put the raw meat into vinegar. Normally, again, what will happen is the vinegar is strong enough that it will constrict the blood vessels, and therefore the blood will stay under the surface where it's supposed to be. But sometimes, maybe if the vinegar is not strong enough, whatever, then fakers, it'll cause the blood will rush to the surface. And therefore, you have a piece of meat that's redder than usual, where you have blood has come to the surface. Anyway, so that's one case. The second case is bayi. The second case, again, is basim, the testicles of an animal. As we said before, the first case is umsi, is meat that's red, either, as Rashi says, because the animal is injured, or as other Rishonim say, because the meat was placed in vinegar and the blood rushed to the surface. Be'e is testicles of an animal. Umizriti, and a piece of the neck of the animal that has the jugular veins or the carotid arteries or whatever, large blood vessels from the neck. So those three, pligibar of Acha Ravina. Rav Acha and Ravina have a machlokas about a particular din with those three things. And I'm going to interject before it gives the actual machlokas. B'chol ha-Torah kula Ravina l'kula v'Rav Acha l'chumra. Throughout the rest of Shas, whenever we have a machlokas between these two chachamim, Ravina is the one who's meikel, Rav Acha is the one who's machmir. The hilchta Ravina l'kula. And in all those cases, the halacha is like Ravina, that were meikel. Levar mehani tzvah. Except for the following three, the Rav Acha l'kula v'Ravina l'chumra, where you have it the other way around, Rav Acha and these three is meikel, these three that we just mentioned, the red meat, the beisim, and the neck, those three is the other way around, the Rav Acha l'kula v'Ravina l'chumra, there Rav Acha is the one who's meikel, in the case that we're going to present in a second, and Ravina is the one who's machmir, and again, the hilchta, Rav Acha l'kula, the halacha is like Rav Acha, that would meikel. In other words, it comes out in all of their machlokas in, we go according to the one who's meikel. Usually Ravina is the one who's meikel, in these particular three cases, Rav Acha is the one who's meikel. With that said, Rav Akiva Eger points out in Gurion HaShas, you have a couple of exceptions, including a half dozen exceptions from a couple of places in Shas, where we find that actually that Ravina is the one who's machmir, and the halacha is actually like him. So it's not an absolute rule, but in general, okay. So what is the case is like this.
Most of the time
it goes according to whichever of the two of them is meikel, right? Okay. So the first case is as follows. Umsa de asmik, if you have a piece of raw meat that became red, again, according to Rashi, asmik means it became red. Sumak is the Aramaic word for red. So again, according to Rashi, we're talking about the animal was bruised or injured during its lifetime, and now you have a collection of blood in the muscles over there. According to other Rishonim, we're talking about that it was placed in vinegar and blood rushed to the surface.
Why would they place them in vinegar?
Again, we said before because that was an alternative. So that was an alternative to kashering it with salt or with roasting,
yeah,
was to put it in vinegar. Usually, it would cause that the blood vessels constrict, and therefore the blood remains below the surface, and then no problem. Meat is mutter to eat. You could even eat it raw if you wanted, and then you could cook it in the normal way. Here we're talking about where, let's say, the vinegar was bad or whatever, and therefore instead the blood rushed to the surface. Okay. Chascha umalcha. So now like this. If you make cuts in it so that the blood can flow out, and you salt it after the lukdeir nami shapur dami, then you're even allowed to cook it in a pot, then there's no problem. You kashered it properly. And if you cut it and salted it.
You took the blood?
Yeah, so therefore, so you cut it, so that way the area where the blood is will be able to flow out freely, and you salted it, so then you're good. Talya nami b'shvuda, and another possibility, if you hang it on a spit and roast it over the fire, also good. Doyib dama, fine, the blood will flow out, and therefore, since it's hanging, then you're good. So everybody agrees on those. According to what we're saying here, no, it doesn't. Again, according to Tosfos and Amud Aleph, regardless, when you're roasting meat, Tosfos learns you always need to cut to make sure that the blood drains out. The halacha is not like Tosfos, though. The halacha is that either you don't need to at all when you're roasting it, or at most what you need to do is you need to cut the blood vessels that are far below the surface. On top of that, by the way, you have another machlokas, whether when you're roasting meat to kasher it, do you need to salt it at all? Our Gemara is mentioning cutting it and salting it only in connection with cooking it in a pot. So does that mean you don't need to salt it at all if you're going to roast it? So again, you have a machlokas for showing them. Again, you have a machlokas for Rashi and Tosfos on that. Do you need to salt it at all? The minhag is that you salt it a little bit. You don't salt it as much as you would for kashering meat, but you salt it a little bit. To be yotzei of the day, because the roasting will take out the meat, but will take out the blood, but you still have some salt on there to help it off.
So it will go through the skin.
Well, I mean, the skin has been taken off already. No, we're talking just meat. You don't salt meat with the, you don't eat meat with the skin on, with the skin still on. Okay. Now, those parts, the part about if you cut it and salt it, and the part about if you put it on a spit to roast, everybody agrees to that. That in those cases, it would be much. The question is, agumri, what would happen if you took this meat that has this red area on it and you put it directly on the coals to roast? Is that good enough or not? Is the blood going to come out? So that's...
But that was inside the muscle, we said.
That's the question. Pligi bar Rav Acha v'Ravina. So now Rav Acha and Ravina argue. Chad omen mishav she'ibilei. One says that the heat of the coals will pull out the blood, therefore it's fine, even if you didn't cut it.
Like
The other one says that no, the coals are going to cause, they're going to cause the blood vessels to constrict, and therefore the meat, and therefore the blood is not going to come out. It's going to be cooked inside the meat, and it already moved from where it was supposed to be because it, you said it became red. So therefore, you're going to have a problem. You're going to have a traceable piece of meat.
In other words, when you do it,
normal clear is hanging over the fire. This is why the Gemara brings this in Tzachim, because it talks about over there how you take a carbon paste, you put it on a spit, and you hang it over the fire. If in fact it's not allowed if it actually touches the fire, you have a problem over there because not all of it is kliyesh. But the
it's hotter than they put it on the coals.
Yeah. Well, not so much it's hotter, but no, it's not so much that it's hotter. It's when it's hanging over the fire, then the blood can flow out freely. But when you have it directly on top of the coals, then the coals may stop it, so it's a flat surface.
Okay.
So therefore, that may prevent the blood from coming out.
So you mean it has to be really on top of on the fire?
Yeah, but it means that it's usually hanging over the fire, not sitting on the coals. Yeah.
Right.
So that's the machloket.
Well, why wouldn't it not be clear if it's sitting on the coals?
Again, because it's a flatter surface, and therefore the blood may not flow out effectively. That's why that is why Ravina is being machmir and say that's no good. The hilchah, and as we said, the halacha is that. So that's the thing. So chadam and mishav sheivilei. So the acha says no problem. The heat of the coals will still draw out the blood. The chadam and mitzvah tamtilei. The other one, Ravina says no. It's going to cook the blood where it is. It's going to constrict the blood vessels and cook the blood where it is. So therefore, and the halacha, as we said, is like Rav Acha who's making. And the same thing when it comes to the basin, the testicles, same idea, that if you didn't, when they have the blood vessels in them, like we said before, when the animal's over 30 days old, if you put them on the coals, you have the same machlokas. V'chein mizuki, and the same machlokas you have with the neck containing the large blood vessels, same idea. In all those cases, you have the argument that if you put it directly on the coals, does the heat of the coals and the heat of the fire take out the blood, or does it not? And the halacha is that it does, and therefore it's mutter.
Does if you put on the
cold. Right. Okay. More dinim on this subject.
Where the blood doesn't drip very much.
Right, even though there's not that much room for the blood to drip, but nevertheless it will, and therefore you. Okay. Another case. Resha b'kivsha. Let's talk about, suppose you have a head of an animal. Now, a head of an animal has hair all over it, so you want to be able to, you want to be able to get off the hair. What's an easy way to do it? Rashi describes, you get it wet, and then you bury it in hot ashes, and the hot ashes help the hair and the between the water and the hot ashes, it helps the hair come out more easily.
Doesn't the hair come out on the skin?
Not necessarily do you skin the head before you eat it. The head as it is has very little meat on it. Mostly what you're going to be eating, the outside of the head has very little meat on it. Mostly what you're going to be eating is the brain. If you're going to be eating a head, mostly you're going to be eating the brain. And you have bits of muscle on the outside of the head, so therefore you're not going to bother skinning it, because if you skin it, you have nothing left on the outside, pretty much. So you have to remove the hair somehow. So you have it, you bury it, b'kivsha, means you're burying it in hot ashes. Now you have a problem with that, because you haven't kashered it yet. What do to avoid that the blood, you said before, you have blood in the membranes around the brain. What do you do to prevent that from causing problems of transfers? So it's like this. If you stick the head in the ashes with the neck down, so now therefore all the blood can flow out through there, then fine. Diagdama, so then good. The blood can flow out through the neck, the shari, and therefore it's mutter. Asdudin, on the other hand, if you put the head on one of its sides, no good. Mikha coffee, then the blood is going to congeal. It's going to congeal where it is from the heat of the fire. But also, and then it's going to be also. Then the whole brain is going to be also.
It has to be.
So you have to put it neck down, or another possibility. Another possibility is you can put it with the nostril down, and then it depends. If you stick something into the nostril to make sure that they stay open, that they don't get clogged, then it's mutter, then shari. The eloi also, and if not, then it's also because they might get clogged up. Ikadamri, another version of that last one is anchiri va'beis hashchita, whether you put it up with the nostrils down or whether you put it with the beis hashchita, the neck down, either way, not a problem. Doiv, the blood will flow out and it's mutter. In other words, according to the second version, you don't have to put something in to keep the nostrils open. It's good enough to just do as is.
Anchiri
means the nostrils. Asdodin, or if you put it on with the neck down, then doiv, then the blood will flow out. Asdodin, but if you put it on the side, on any other, with any other side down, only idos de midi shori, only if you stick something in, you make a hole, you make a hole in that part of the skull to allow the blood to flow out, then good. The Eloi also, and if not, then it's going to be also because the blood is going to be cooked inside there. And Shulchan Aruch brings, that Amar brings, practically speaking, don't do it on any side because it may turn over as while it's there in the middle. It may turn over and you won't realize. So the minhag is actually the minhag developed to remove the brain before you do that. Remove the brain, kasher it separately, and then fine. You want to kasher the rest of the head in order to be able to eat the meat on the outside of the skull. Then fine. Then already you don't have a problem because then you don't have the brain and the membranes in there to have a problem with the blood in it getting
accumulating.
That's the point. So once you have the brain removed, then you don't have a problem. Tosfos also talks about the issue, the related issue when you have to defeather a chicken. What you do in order to avoid the same issue of if you use heat on it, you have the same problem. It's going to cook, the blood in it is going to cook before you kasher it. So Tosfos talks about throughout the chicken, you have to remove the feathers. With an animal, all you have to worry about is the head. With a chicken or any other bird, you have to worry about the feathers all over the body. So Tosfos talks about ways in which it's mutter. Practically speaking, I'm given to understand that nowadays they in kosher chicken processing plants, they don't use heat for the defeathering. They use some other method that doesn't involve heat in order not to get into any trouble. Yeah, it's not my diet. Okay.
Vinegar.
Yeah. I don't think they use vinegar, but no.